everybody loves to hate on Trump or whoever, everybody has light in them.
Right.
Everybody has light in them. So if you look for the light, you're going to create light in them and yourself.
Hey guys, JB is in the house. The Wolf is here in the Wolf's Den for another podcast. I'm loving this podcast stuff, by the way. It's fun. It's great. I got great guests. And today I got a particularly great guest. I got Stefan Spencer. How you doing, buddy?
Hey.
I just look at you and you fucking look healthy, man.
Thank you.
But I guessed you're 48 years old. You look probably 35, but I guessed your age because boom, I got it. Okay. Because one thing that stuck out here is on your bio is that you were coding back in the 80s. I did a quick math there, right? But interesting. So I'm a little older than you, right? The first time I was shown that was in high school as well, right? And it was BASIC, right? Beginner's All-Purpose Symbolic Instruction Code. I had this terrible, boring teacher, like the teacher from Ferris Bueller's there, Ben Stein, and nothing on this fucking my teacher. Like you know, it was like people drooling and sleep, right? And I remember just thinking, oh, this is so stupid. Why am I, you know, and I just say it was if then for us. I'm like, fuck that. And too bad, because like, I mean, look what happened, right? You know? So you actually were coding and you actually made something of it, right?
Yeah. So I taught myself BASIC, and then that wasn't good enough. So I taught myself assembly language. So I was coding in hexadecimal as this little kid. Wrote my own bulletin board system.
What hexadecimals?
Well,
let me call my code a hex.
Yeah, so a decimal is like 0 to 9, and then the tens place, you get a 1, and then you go back to 0. Well, if it's a base 16 hexadecimal, then you go 0 to 9, and then A, B, C, D, E, F, and then that's 15. You go to the 1 to the tens place, which is actually the 16th place.
Oh, shit. Okay, I get it.
So 1, 0 is actually 16 instead of 10.
Got it. Makes sense. All right, so listen, you have a really interesting life, right? So let's your specialty, right? What you're really known for is SEO, search engine optimization, right?
That's right.
You speak all over the world about it. You have written this amazingly large, awesome book, which I'm scared. When you showed me this book, yes, thank you for this book, but you showed me this book, I was like, fuck. I mean, like, I hate writing more than anything in the world. So for me to write this book would take like 7 years. So my book is a little thinner here, but I heard it's a great book, which I'm going to actually start reading through it tonight. So tell me exactly, you know, I think everyone, at this point, hopefully most people know what SEO is. It's, you know, getting yourself towards organically towards the top of search engines like Google and so forth, right?
Right.
So it's a way to get traffic to your site without spending money on advertising, right?
Right.
So why don't you just get, you know, that's the layman. So why don't you give me your definition of SEO and just sort of like the your overarching principle that guides it.
So if you consider the free traffic you get, it's not really free because you have to put time and effort and internal staff and so forth. But that's all part of the earned media kind of triumvirate. You got paid media. A lot of folks are spending a lot of money on Facebook ads and Google ads.
Yeah.
And then there's the owned media, the stuff that you just own. It's your IP, your turf.
Right.
And one of my mentors, James Shramko, talks about owning the race course. And I think this is a really important point that if you're building everything on a platform like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever, and then they
change the algorithm
or ban your account,
whatever,
you have to start all over again.
Yeah.
So you want to own the race course. And that means driving traffic more to your site than to your social platforms. Even if you have a huge following on one of the platforms or multiple of them, that's part of the strategy. But the end game is always to build up your own turf.
Right. So essentially, I agree with that, right? And I think the smart thing to do is diversification, right? Like I would never want to have all my eggs in one basket, right?
Correct.
So if you're advertising only on Facebook, there was this day, what was it called? Like when they changed the algorithm, when Elite Daily and all these companies just went out of business. They got destroyed because Facebook changed the way they did business. I think in the olden Facebook days, if you clicked on an article, it would take you to their website. And then Facebook made a change, but if you clicked on it, you would actually read it within Facebook, right? And all these companies went out of business or got destroyed with around the same time. In fact, one of my other guests that was on here, Dan Fleischman, he.
I was listening to that interview.
Yeah, he's a great guy. So, brilliant guy too. And so I agree. So the idea would be to be somewhat diversified. So have SEO, meaning so you're getting traffic organically. And as you said, it costs money. It's not free, right? There's time and energy spent in optimizing.
You have to buy tools.
Hiring consultants like you to make sure.
Exactly.
Right? But at the end of the day, though, the idea is that, you know, once you get towards the top, and I think you have to obviously maintain it, right? It's not like the thing where you're not like at the top and then you can't rest on your laurels. You have to be constantly, right, standing vigilant.
It's not set it and forget it. Yeah. It's like, you're going to build an asset, which is different from the paid media side of things, where let's say you spend a lot of money on Google Ads and you decide to take the summer off. Well, all that traffic, all that revenue just goes away. Whereas with SEO, you build a great platform, you have it optimized, be not only search engine friendly, but search engine optimized. And then you do some link building, get a lot of great high authority, high trust links pointed to your site. You take the summer off and it just ticks away, making you money, getting revenue, even though you stopped link building for...
All right, you ready for this, guys? This watch, how awesome is this watch? This is a fine watch. It's a masterpiece, honestly. It looks beautiful, feels great on your wrist. It's a conversation starter, right? You know, I'll be honest, right? We have phones these days, right? Do you really need a watch? No. You don't really need a watch, but you know what? Why does everyone wear them? Because they look great. They say something about a man and a woman for that matter too, okay? But this particular watch, a Vincero, this is like, I mean, this rivals in terms of workmanship, quality, the way it feels, and especially the way it looks. This thing looks like it could cost $20,000, $30,000. I have some watches that are up to $100,000. Seriously, I have watches that are 100 grand, and they're beautiful, but honestly, you couldn't tell the difference. Vincero is off the rails. It really is. I literally love this watch. I really, really do. And when you wear it, you feel good. You just do. It's almost like part of the ensemble of a suit. You know, a great suit makes a man feel great. Great watch, same way. It's why you always see, you know, why is it, do you think, that like when you see like Tony Stark and Iron Man, why is it like he goes and grabs a watch and they show it? Because it's cool. This is a cool watch. You want this watch, and it makes you feel great when you put it on. Just imagine that, having this on your wrist, all right? You know, you're driving down the road in a nice car, you feel good, all right? How much do you think this watch costs? Right? It's thousands of dollars. It should be, right? Beauty is, by the way, because of technology nowadays, you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for a watch like this that keeps perfect time. This watch keeps as good a time as the watch they have on the space shuttle. How about that? I'm serious, because it's not because that I'm not saying that only Vincero's like that, but watches now, like they're great. It's about style. It's about how it looks and feels, and there's no better than this one. This is pretty damn awesome, right? Okay, so what's the story? This watch, it's not $10,000 or $5,000. Okay, ready for this? Hold on, let me give you the exact offer here because you're going to die here. This watch is only a couple of $100. That's it. No one would if I told you it's $5,000, you would not know the difference. Bottom line, you know that's true. Okay? Let me give you the exact thing here. Here's the offer. Ready? You're going to get 15% off when you use the code WOLF. W-O-L-F. That spells WOLF, last time I checked, right? Okay? So Vincero, V-I-N-C-E-R-O, VinceroWatches.com. Use the code WOLF. Get 15% off. I'm telling you. Listen, this watch, and I'll admit they gave me this watch. How about this? I would have bought it. That's how much I like this watch, okay? Give it a shot. You know, again, it's the sort of thing, you know, it's not a massive amount of money, but the way you feel, the benefits it gives you, it's so worth it. Just buy one to start. Give it a shot. You buy one. I promise you one thing. Before this is all done, you'll have many, many Vincero watches. They're addictive. You're going to love it. All right? Check it out. VinceroWatches.com. Enter Wolf. Get your discount. Time for the Wolf to sell you something. Ready? No, this is cool. I'm not really going to have to sell you this. You're going to want to buy this. This is something pretty mandatory in your life. Now, sure, like probably 80, 90% of you already have some sort of workplace coverage in terms of life insurance. If you don't, you got to get some. I mean, life insurance is, it's one of those things you don't think about it. And then God forbid something happens and the people you love are those that suffer, right? So the thought of it, it's almost like it's self-defeating because we don't want to think about things like that, but we have to, especially as you get older, meaning, you know, when you cross over 21 years old and you no longer can think like a kid, you got to start thinking like a grown up, right? Well, you know what? It's a really strategic way to go about thinking is, hey, you know, what's my downside? That's what life insurance is about. Now, most people, you have some sort of coverage from your employer. You have some sort of workplace life insurance policy in place, right? But the truth is, it's typically just like kind of a morsel of what you'd really need. It's not enough, all right? So this company, Policy Genius, what they do is they really specialize in helping people like you who have some sort of insurance in place, some sort of workplace life insurance, and they give them the extra coverage they need to make it actually worthwhile. You get it? Because if it's not enough money, not enough coverage you're getting, it's almost as good as having nothing. It just prolongs the agony. So they specialize in that niche, and it's a big one. It's an important one. So you got to take a really close look at this. Now, of course, they also have things for home and auto as well. But this idea that what you have right now, you might have been lulled into a false sense of security. You know, you think, oh, yeah, everything's good. I got some insurance, right? I mean, reality hits. You know, you might not be around to find out, but let me tell you something, all right? If you don't cover yourself, the people that you love, the people that you care about, those are the ones who suffer. Bottom line, personally, I would never go through life without being covered, unless I couldn't get covered, right? I'm sure you can, all right? So here's the deal. I want you to go to policygenius.com. Check it out. They have people on staff that will guide you through this process every step of the way. They have this calculator, this online system they use for finding you the absolute best policy, the best coverage. And just, you know, most of you are probably on the younger side, right? It costs so little that they got life insurance. When you do it now, it's one of those things you want to do now while you're on the younger side, because as you get older, it becomes more expensive, right? So that's the deal, all right? So let me just make sure I read this to you the right way here, all right? My requirement, all right? No, seriously, policygenius.com. Go there today. Supplement your workplace life insurance. Protect your family, those that you love and care about, all right? And again, you probably have a little taste of something right now. Don't kid yourself. You need to get the real deal here. And that's policygenius.com. Head over there after this podcast.
You know, 3 or 4 months.
Sure. So when you say high trust, high authority, meaning, for instance, that your site gets valued higher if you have other people or perceived authority figures, like news channels or like, you know, Fox News writes about you and points, mentions your name, that sort of backlinks, right? If it's linked to you, you know, so like why Wikipedia always shows up at the top, right? Because they have all these backlinks and so forth. Is that
right.
What you mean?
Right. Yeah. And funny about Wikipedia, they were one of the first sites to decide to not pass PageRank to the sites that are listed inside of Wikipedia. So all the external links, you get no juice, no PageRank from being mentioned inside of Wikipedia. That article might rank really well.
Sure, yeah,
but
right.
The fact you're...
it's not reciprocal, right?
Yeah, so the let's say, jbelforttraining.com, that's one of your sites.
Right.
If that's mentioned in your Wikipedia article, you get no juice from that.
I don't fucking like my Wikipedia.
I don't like your
bastards.
Wikipedia either.
You know, and by the way, a long time ago when it first came out, I was like, fuck. I was like, these bastards are saying stuff about me. It wasn't true. A lot of it was inaccurate, right? Skewed to the negative. So I said, fuck it, I'm going to change it, right? And I didn't know really about it. So I changed it. And it was one idiot that was like my nemesis, this guy. I forgot his name. And this is what bothers me about the internet. You know, they hide behind pseudonyms. Like, get out and show your fucking self, okay? If you don't like me, that's fair. You can hate me or love me, it's fine. But you're behind a pseudonym and that guy's, you know, trying to, you know, just, you know, kind of seeding bad stuff in there. And I'm not saying I was a freaking angel by any account. That's public information. But all I want is something that's fair and balanced, right? That's the idea. I'm not looking for my past is one of my assets. So I'm not looking to hide that. But as you say, it is a little bit negative. So, you know, and I didn't give up on him. It's like, fuck you, I'm this bastard. I just, you know, every once in a while, I'm like, you know.
Well, it's a very unique community. So you have to play by the rules, and there are a lot of zealots inside of...
I don't like those people. I really resent those people.
Well, there's a lot of folks in there that mean well and do good work, and they put a lot of their time and effort into making Wikipedia a fantastic resource.
What's their motivation for that? They don't get paid, do they?
No.
So what's them? I mean, I don't know. There's something weird about that to me. So someone's sitting there, you know, what's the, you know, to me, I look at, like, there's a profit motive, there's a recognition motive. What's the motive behind someone, unless you don't like, unless you have an axe to grind with someone, why are you there actively commenting about them? I don't get it.
I think I would guess, and I don't know how these people are thinking, any particular person, but there is a lot of recognition. It is a social network of sorts. So you have your page that is like your user page on Wikipedia. You have a talk page for that page and for any article that you create. There's a talk page. For example, there's a talk page on your Wikipedia article. Have you ever looked at that?
Probably in the past, a while back, I was digging into it. And then I just, like, you know, it's such bullshit, the whole thing, that, you know, I was like, I don't, you know, I love my haters, by the way. I think my haters are awesome. I want to thank them. Thank you for hating me, because you create massive engagement. So I always say, every time you hate me, I get $10. So keep fucking hating me, right? But, you know, after a while, it's a little frustrating when people just outright, you know, lie, or you can see there's an obvious agenda. Listen, everybody has an agenda in some level and a point of view. It's very hard to be totally objective, right? Mm. But for me, it became this thing where, like, you know, I think I'm well known enough that, you know, it's like, I don't think that's going to make or break one thing. Although obviously it would be good if it was better than worse, right?
Yeah, I think it's important to be polarizing. Yeah. Because if everybody likes you, then nobody really likes you. You're not making a difference in the world. So
let's talk about Tony Robbins for a minute, because I know you know Tony, right?
Yeah.
And you traveled with Tony, right?
Yeah, I did 3 years of Platinum Partnership. So you mentioned at the beginning of this episode that I looked younger than my 48 years. Well, actually, I looked a lot older over a decade ago. If you look at my getyourselfoptimized.com website, which is where one of my podcast shows, you'll see a before and after.
Right. Now everyone's listening closely. So what's the secret to that? You're doing the Benjamin Button on us, basically?
Yes.
Let's see, what's the secret? I want to know.
Well, there were a bunch of secrets, but mindset started it all. And the mindset shift came in one big dose. And it was at my first Tony Robbins event. It was Unleash the Power Within. I did a firewalk. Meaning I walked on 2,000 degree hot coals in my bare feet, and I didn't get burned, didn't get any blisters or anything. And I thought, wow, if I can do that, I can do anything. And 2 weeks later, I went and got LASIK surgery, which I had been putting off for years.
So you had glasses before.
So I used to have glasses.
Big Coke bottle glasses?
I looked really nerdy with glasses. And then 2 months after that, I went and got a hair transplant. So I went to Bosley in Chicago.
Really?
And boy, was
Bosley,
that.
Bosley, I know.
They used painful. To
have, really? The plugs? They
plug? No, not plugs. They actually take one hair follicle at a time and implant them.
Really?
Yeah.
And how many follicles in total, what did they do? It's like millions of little thousands of
follicles? No,
tens of thousands of follicles?
Thousands. Maybe several thousand. I don't remember the actual number, but
to me, your hair wasn't a define, which is great, right? Because in the sense that if you say so, oh yeah, nice plugs or something like that, that's not probably a good thing, right?
But right. When hair plugs are no longer a thing anymore. They have robot arms.
They were pretty fucking bad. But I remember in the early, in the 80s, see some guy like throws fucking plugs. You know, it's like, what the fuck are you doing, right? So I didn't even notice your hair. I just thought it was your natural hair.
Yeah, everybody knows. Thinks it's my, it is my hair.
I'm being sponsored by Bosley, so go to see Bosley.
Well, it's my hair from the back of my head where not affected by the
dihydroepiendostrine. I know the whole thing. Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah,
I also take testosterone boosting herbal supplements. Really? Access Labs.
I just shoot the fucking right into my pure testosterone.
Yeah,
I want to be young. You know?
So the herbal supplements are great.
Really?
And
so what is it, like precursors to testosterone, or is
yeah? So there's two different supplements I take. One's Hypertest, the other is Myodex. And one reduces the dehydroxy testosterone, the other one boosts the good testosterone.
Methyl-bound testosterone, right? Yeah, there's two types, bound and unbound.
Yeah. So I have been taking lots of supplements, but when I went in for the hair transplant, I was awake for the whole time, the 8 hours, and at the time, they took a little strip from the back of your head, like an inch thick, from ear to ear, and you're awake through the whole thing, and they go off for a while, and they count all the hair follicles, so and then come
like,
back.
They got like
and
a fucking scout. Like they, yeah. And like then fucking Hannibal Lecter did. Like,
yeah, and I'm awake the whole time. And really? I don't even like needles. So they come back. The doctor says, you know what? We don't have enough follicles, so I'm going to have to cut some more. I'm like, oh, God, please, no. Okay, fine, go ahead, because I wanted this to be worth it. So then he does more cutting. And then by the end of it, he has to, like, close all that up. It's super tight back there because I'm missing a bunch of skin.
Got it.
And then they take the hair follicles one at a time and insert them into where I need it.
So in other words, they don't take the actual strip of skin and put the skin on your head. They pull out the hair they extract
all
the hair follicles from the strip of skin.
Correct.
And then plug them into like the areas that are like not doing well, right? The ones that are affected by
correct
male pattern baldness, so to speak.
Correct.
Right?
Now they have robot arms now. This was back in 2009 that I had the procedure, so they didn't have this tech back then. But the robot arm can take the hair follicles one at a time and extract them instead of doing the strip that you get removed. So you can get it across the whole area of the back of your head where you're not affected by hair loss.
So is that more painful to do like one?
It's less painful. Really? I haven't done it.
It's like clicking out eyebrows one at a time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right?
Well, you get topical anesthetic. But yeah, it's...
I can say this. You look good, by the way.
Thank you.
Success. So go to bosley.com and get your hair. But I didn't even notice it. So, no, you look.
That's just one small part of the whole equation that made me look and feel and exude youth.
I brought up Tony Robbins for a reason. He's getting all this bad press right now, which I think is disgusting. All right. You know, I don't know Tony well. I've attended one event of his and you can hate Tony, you could love Tony, but he's not an evil guy.
No, you know what? You know? Everybody loves to hate on Trump or whoever. Everybody has light in them.
Right.
Everybody has light in them. So if you look for the light, you're going to create light in them and yourself and spread more light around the world.
I think that what bothers me about the Tony Robbins thing is two things. Number one is that the allegations are really, really old. Mm-hmm. So I think that I'm not saying whether true or untrue. It's that, you know, I don't know. How do I know? Right. I suspect probably maybe some are and many are blown up out of proportion. I think it takes two to tango sometimes. But again, you know, I have a daughter who I love to death. And I would not want someone harassing her. Mm-hmm. But the problem I have with this stuff when it's really old, you know, and you have no way of defending yourself. Right. And you're essentially being guilty till proven innocent. And it's so far back. There's no real way to get context. And also, speaking of context, the other stuff that came up with his language, using the N-word, right? Which is a word I never use, right? And I grew up in a very liberal, very non-racist household, right? Since I was never was like that. But if you actually listen to it, the context was not evil at all. It wasn't slurs like that. And they're trying to make it into something. And that's what bothers me.
Out of context, it sounds bad. Yeah, but in context... And I went to a lot of his seminars, and he uses a lot of swear words. He definitely challenges people, but it's for a point. It's not to be sensationalist. It's to introduce pattern interrupts to get people out of a trance and out of their story.
The one thing I mean, women twist their nipples though. What was that about? Like that, I don't know
what that was.
Kind of intrigued me. I mean,
I don't recall anything, but I read a lot of the articles.
Right. I know. I never seen, I was like, really? I was like, because I was trying to always, because I think that he's a good guy, actually. So I'm saying, well, I wonder why he would do that. So obviously the short answer is breaking a pattern, right? And just so that people know what breaking a pattern means, is like, in other words, it's doing something that's extreme and out of the ordinary to disrupt a way of thinking that you have. So we have this almost automatic patterns we run that become who we are. They're based on our unconscious mind. And, you know, it comes from all the stuff that we took in since childhood. And in many times these patterns serve us and they help us move through the world elegantly and effectively, right? That's why you don't have to go to every single door and say, what's that thing? Is that a strange piece of wood with a knob? No, you know, it's a freaking door, right? So it helps us with some stuff, but also it can be pretty disempowering. You have patterns that are these sort of, you know, based with limiting beliefs and stuff. So I understand his philosophy. It's like an NLP-based stuff, right? He studied with Bandler originally, and Bandler's a friend of mine. I love Dr. Bandler, right? And so I get it. It just seemed to me a bit, you know, I was like, oh, really? There's part of me I wanted to just this morbid curiosity, you know. But I guess I feel bad because I think he helps a lot of people.
He does. He's had a huge impact on my life. Not only did it wake me up to make all these changes, diet changes, and so forth, so I wouldn't be the healthy specimen that I am. Not that I'm perfect. I have a lot of ways to go, but I'm way healthier than I would have been.
You look pretty fucking healthy to me. I mean, yeah. I got to say, you know? Well,
thank you. And I am.
You're like, you know, you're drinking some green shit over there. I'm drinking like Red Bull. I'm, like, I'm polluting my body. You're just getting younger, you know?
Well, I do pay a lot more attention than I used to about what I put in my body. So I'm much healthier.
Have you ever had a drug issue in your life?
Never.
No, me neither. No, I took a couple of drugs here and there, but you know,
yeah, I'm
sober for 20 plus years, which is pretty cool.
But, that is awesome.
I did do back in the day enough cocaine to do a ski jump off of, which I'm not proud of, but I look back and I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? But you know, we do things when we're younger.
Well, it's all a gift. I
it is. The thing mistakes you make are, and I believe the power of failure, all this stuff is important. So let's move off of Tony. I just wanted to get your opinion. By the way, how fucking big is he though? He's huge, right?
He is 6'7".
No, but like, he's not just how tall. He's like,
and his hands are huge.
Everything, his teeth are big. He's
you know
big.
How that happened.
Yeah, he has a tumor on his pituitary. And his anterior pituitary secretes growth hormone. So when he's like 18, he grew 9 inches. I know.
Yeah, and thankfully that shut off, so it didn't
or else he'd be like 30 feet. He'd be like a giant, like stepping around the fucking city. But he's big. He's fucking big, you know, and I think part of his effectiveness almost like in that way is an asset I don't share, by the way. I'm small, but he's a fucking menacing big figure on stage, very powerful. He's a great speaker too.
He is a great speaker, one of the best in the world.
Well, I wish him, I hope that, and I suspect that this will be some pain for him, and he'll grow from it and learn from it. And I think it'll be a blip and he'll go on to even bigger and better things. I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, back to you. So I saw one thing on your bio here that you ended up living in New Zealand, place I've been to and love, which really New Zealand's pretty cool, especially down like, you know, the Queenstown area. Right. And I've been out to Christchurch after the earthquake, which was fucking sick. Right. But tell me, how'd you end up going down to New Zealand? Is there a reason for that?
I just had this intuition. So being in the internet industry, I realized I could do this internet thing from anywhere. And I thought, where in the world would I just love to be?
Really?
And I came up with New Zealand and applied for permanent residency and got in. So I convinced my wife at the time and my kids that we should move halfway around the world.
It's like three people in history that have an intuition to move to New Zealand. It's not like a common thing, right? To move, I mean,
maybe since Lord of the Rings.
Let me say this. It's actually very common for people living in China, okay, and in that part of the world and I've done consulting for companies that sell real estate in New Zealand. So a lot of Chinese people want to move there because they can get second residences there, great education system, protection of wealth if, God forbid, something happens, right? So a lot of, it's a very robust, market there for Chinese, and in Australia as well, for Chinese people looking to, you know, eventually emigrate, or certainly it's very prestigious to have your children educated outside of China, right? So, but from here, it's pretty uncommon that you find someone that moved to New Zealand. So you were married when you moved there, huh?
I was.
Yeah. And you have a daughter?
I have three daughters.
Three daughters. And how old were they when you moved to New Zealand?
Two of them were teenagers, and one was about 7. Yeah. So I've got now a 28-year-old, a 26-year-old,
and what do your kids do?
Yeah, so my oldest is actually an SEO consultant, so she followed right in my footsteps. Mm-hmm. In fact, she just did last year, it was a while ago now, but last year she was on MSNBC talking about SEO. So that was
a
proud moment for a dad. And my youngest is also an entrepreneur, and she has a piano teaching business in Orange County.
Okay.
Like 40 some students.
What type of like classical piano or more like rock and roll? Yeah,
it's classical, right. Really.
Okay.
Yeah. She even composes her own music and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And my middle daughter just finished a bachelor's degree at University of Wisconsin-Madison in environmental studies, and minoring in geography.
So you have three successful kids you're proud of, I can tell.
I'm very proud of them.
It's awesome. And your wife, she's does she do a dating? She's a dating or a love coach?
Yeah, she's a love coach.
I love it. Let me hear about this.
We met at the Tony Robbins event, Date with Destiny. So that's a huge.
How long ago?
So that was in 2016, December of 2016.
Oh, so it's new.
Yeah.
So how many times you married?
This is my second marriage.
Okay. Ah, you're an amateur. I've been, no, come on. Could you beat by a bunch of marriages now? So you met and date with Destiny, right? And yeah. And what was it? So just like, were you just like standing near each other or you saw, saw her from across the room and you said, oh my God, was it love at first sight or?
Crazy story. So I had this awakening experience at Tony Robbins Platinum trip 2 months earlier in India. So I'm getting touched by one of the oneness monks who is just this really holy guy. And he gives me what's called a diksha, a oneness blessing, puts his hands on my head and I'm blissed out. I was agnostic, almost atheistic my whole life. I was raised by, part of my childhood, I was raised by grandparents. One was Jehovah's Witness, one was a Catholic. And
okay.
I thought, wow, all of this is bunk because they all contradict each other.
Mm.
So I go through life as an agnostic until this event in India. I get touched. I like have this profound experience. I don't know what it's like to take LSD or something, but I could imagine that it was like this.
That's the one drug I've never taken by. It's the only one, by the way. I had a bucket list. I was trying every drug in the world. I was scared to take LSD because I figured I'm a little nutty. I figured I'm the one guy that will have a bad trip and never recover. I'll be in the fucking mental institution. So I was scared. So was it like, you think it was like getting touched by this monk was like taking LSD thing?
Yeah, because everything was technicolor. Like I went outside afterwards. I felt so peaceful and connected to the creator, to the fabric of creation. And the green of the grass and the trees and everything was the most technicolor green I'd ever seen. Like imagine the most colorful technicolor cartoon. And that was what I was seeing. It was just bizarre, but calming and amazing at the same time.
So I'm a skeptic when it comes to this stuff, right?
I was too.
But I'm not a skeptic in a negative way. No, I'm not saying it's not true. I just, my own belief systems, like I just couldn't imagine someone touching me. And my wife is very obvious. She's more like you. She would definitely think, oh yeah, of course. You know, there's different.
So, I was a lot like you though.
So I couldn't see that could actually be true. I'm not calling you a liar by any stretch, but I don't get it. Like,
I would not have believed it if we were switched roles.
Was he a monk like from like a,
yeah, one,
like a like kung had, fu monk with bald like that with the robe bald, right?
The robe and his bald and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's a real monk.
A real monk who's dedicated his life
to monkism.
To this
being a monk.
Following this guru.
Okay.
And studying oneness. And he
lived. Define oneness.
Yeah. So there's this it's now merged with One World Academy, but it was Oneness University at the time that I went. And they have this huge campus near Chennai, this amazing temple. And you go there, you feel the connection. You feel so, I don't know, spiritual. It's incredible. Just being in the presence of.
Where is it? Energy. In India, where?
In Chennai, southern India.
Okay. I've been to India. I've never been to Chennai. I've been to Mumbai.
Yeah. But it's a few hours out from Chennai. So I'm not even there. I'm in India, but at Udaipur, and the monks were brought in. That was where the event was taking place that Tony was running. So when this, I had gotten dikshas before, but, and they felt good and calming and nice, but this
Diksha
one.
Is the oneness blessing.
The oneness blessing. But this one was I don't know, like a out of
like on
body
steroids, on steroids almost.
It was incredible. And what the monk or monks taught afterwards was told me was that the divine, so the creator is an experience, not a belief.
Mm.
Everybody thinks like, do you believe in God or whatever? Well, you got to experience God. And I experienced God.
I would love to. I mean, I'd love to have that feeling because it's probably an amazing feeling. So it was like,
but it's more than a feeling. It's a permanent shift in your consciousness, in your like brain chemistry.
What year was this? Did you do this?
2012.
Okay. And
so then 2 months later, I'm at this date with Destiny, and I connect with the creator, with the divine, because now like I could order up miracles. It was like the gates had been unleashed or opened, and I was able to
Marianne Williamson-esque here.
Yeah, it was wild and amazing, and I started praying for
manifesting,
like pray for stuff, and it gets delivered and you get more specific, like I want this right away.
Right.
And you get it right away. So 12 hours after I prayed for her to show up, I had written up a whole relationship vision of what I wanted in my ideal mate, what I would bring to the relationship, who I would be, how I would show up. And then I connected and it felt like this was
ordained meant to be,
like I was plugged
ordered in by the universe.
So 12 hours later, a mutual friend had introduced us in the lobby at the very end of the event. This Friday morning was the last day of the event. And so when I did, I was late with doing my homework, creating my poster board and everything. So this was the very last minute. And at the very end, as the event had finished, 2 a.m, this is when I met her in the lobby. A mutual friend introduced us. Mm-hmm. And she told me afterwards that she had prayed for me to show up.
Wow.
48 hours prior to when we met. And then 18 hours after we met, I said, I love you to her. And she said, I love you back. 9 days later, I proposed to her in a hot air balloon. And I already had the ring. I knew within minutes of meeting her that she was the one. And this sounds crazy too. But
no, that doesn't strike me as being crazy. I always know with every woman I've married or in film, you know, kind of for me, it's always been right away. Like my current wife, like, you know, when I really... First, when I really laid eyes on her, I mean, it's a funny story, but I've been doing you not to be around. But you know, I really met her for the first time. I was like, fuck. I'm like, I just knew she was special. You know, I could tell she was different, you know?
So I'm not like impulsive. I'm considered in my big decisions.
You seem like a considered.
But this was
different. You seem like you planned out your, you seem like a planner to me.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm all about strategy. Yeah. I'm all about structure. So when I met her and she told me that she hadn't been touched for the Diksha at Date with Destiny, that last evening, they dedicated several hours to the oneness blessing and then a bunch of people who have been trained in how to give oneness blessings. And I was trained in India on that same trip. So I can go and give Dikshas, touch people on the head. So I was going around doing that to people while the lights were down and nice music was playing and Tony's up in the front just kind of blissed out and chilling. So she tells me that she wasn't touched. And my friend, the guy who introduced us, he also gave her a Diksha because she hadn't gotten touched. And a lot of people, you know, they don't get touched because it's hard to make sure everybody gets a Diksha. So when I prayed for her, I know this sounds crazy.
No, I want to hear it, but I'll have some questions. So I'll finish and then I have a couple questions.
Okay. So,
and observations.
When I touched her, and the way that you do a Diksha is that you pray for the person. And the more that you want the divine grace to pass into the person, the more divine grace passes. So I'm praying for her as I'm touching her, giving her the Diksha, as if she's my soulmate. And this is 10 minutes after we meet. Right. So I know.
But that's your intention. It's in your heart, right?
It's energy, beyond that. It's like it's a knowing. Mm. It was incredible. So I knew I didn't need to go through all the usual. And we had already shed all of our masks through that 6-day course of Date with Destiny where you
reminds your couples retreat, take off your mask. Remember that scene from Couples Retreat with when they go,
oh yeah, that was
remove your mask.
But you know, we positioned stuff, and I got trained by Neil Strauss on pickup after I got
love Neil Strauss.
I love him too. I was
great
in his secret society
great
for like 6
guy.
Years.
He's the best.
He saved me from. I dodged a bullet.
He's a great writer. Neil Strauss is a great writer.
He's one of the best writers of our generation.
I love Neil Strauss. Right? Yeah, I love his books. He's funny as hell too.
Yeah. So I'd learned pickup from Neil,
uh-huh.
And I could use all my skills,
negging, peacocking,
exactly all of that.
Right.
But I didn't.
Okay, you just your authentic self.
Because when I went back to the next intensive, and I told people I just proposed to a woman I had just met 9 days ago, but I know she's the one. And they're like, oh my God, you did what? That was the opposite of what you're supposed to do in pickup, negging and all that sort of stuff. When you lay all your cards out on the table and you say, I want to dedicate my life to you. And it's 9 days after you met.
That's the exact
opposite.
This is, for those of you who don't understand the pull pickup, negging is like basically backhanded compliments to someone like, "Oh, you look beautiful in that dress." Like, third time I saw it tonight. I'm like,
oh my God. Yeah. Or you have a piece of lint in your pocket, and you go like as if you're taking it off her blouse and say, "Oh, you know, you don't want that."
Let me go back because you know I'm a skeptic a little bit here, but and
I was too.
Yeah, but it's little to do with the Diksha and this and what type of religion would that be part of? Hinduism, Buddhism, is it?
It's not really part of any religion.
It's not just okay. It's about just.
There is a lot of Hinduism roots to this, but they describe it as you're basically it's the sugar that you could add to your coffee or your tea or whatever your favorite beverage.
Salt on your face on your food.
Yeah,
so makes everything better.
It fits with Judaism, with Islam, with Hinduism, whatever.
So my problem with a lot of this stuff is with organized religion in general.
Yeah.
Because I think so here's what pops in my mind, let's be honest with you. As soon as you said Oneness University, I'm like, all right, what'd you pay for your Diksha? How much are they making? What's the profit? That's what immediately pops in my head.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people think that. So my question is, what did you pay to go to Oneness University? How much did Tony make on? I'm not even saying that anything wrong, but that's the immediately. So, because I think that on some level, money, not that it corrupts the process, but it makes it suspect because it doesn't, you know, and then that's just one aspect. So it's my first question.
Yeah.
What did it cost to go to Oneness University?
Well, I paid $5,000, I think, for 9 days. And they made a special process for us as platinum partners.
It was like,
and it's
was
a lot more money than
typical.
Was it
like typical. 90, what was it to be like 90,000 a platinum pawn or 70, what was it?
It's about, all in about 130,000 for the year.
So they charge you $5,000, and for that $5,000, do you get a diploma that says now you can be give teachers?
No, you.
Well, no, not really.
No, you don't. You learn a ton of stuff, and you have a transformation typically that happens, but you're not going for a diploma or certification or whatever. But the thing is it's not. They know that
I'm not trying to be obnoxious here. It's just a legitimate question.
I appreciate the questions. I think it's important. Line of inquiry. So if you wanted to go for an entire month to Oneness University, or now it's called O&O, so as I said, Oneness and One World, they combined. So you could go for a month for free, essentially. You just pay a small stipend or a small room and board fee, and that's it. You can go for an entire month, but if you're a busy executive or business owner and you want more
special attention,
you want a lot of the learning condensed.
So general admission is like one of these in the cheap seats for nothing, but if you want to get the teacher from the real guy and like—
No, really— it's all the same real guy, and you know the real monks are still, you are getting the value.
Can I just, visually, so was it like— monks with like yellow and black satin robes, like those kind of monks. Like, what do they look like? White robes or yellow? What do they look like? I always think of Kung Fu, like David Carradine. You know?
Yeah.
Like
so
Shaolin Temple stuff. You know.
I have to remember now. I think there was a lot of white from memory.
All bald.
Yep. Well, actually, were they all bald? So they've made lots of changes.
Well, they're like a monk hairstyle, like a little monkish, you know, Christian monk. Were they?
No, I remember the Diksha that I got from the one monk. He was completely bald. But was everybody bald? Anyway, I think most of them were.
Let me ask you this. So, okay, here's the next question, important. So you had this amazing, obviously, transformational experience, which is great. And I'm really, I think it's great and happy for you. What percentage of the people that went there walked away with that level of transformation, you think? And how many people, okay, so that was different. Some people, it was bullshit. Some people said, wow, it was great, but I don't really, you know, it was great, but not transformational. And what percentage was like, oh my God, this is like, you got to do it because it changes your life?
I would say a large majority got some transformational spiritual epiphany out of the event with Tony at in Udaipur in India, and then the trip that I went to with my new soulmate that I'd met just a month earlier in December. We went to Oneness University in January, and a bunch of plats went on that, but that was not a Tony sanctioned event or anything. So I'm kind of mixing the two events together. So when I went for 9 days, I went with she wasn't my fiance yet. This is the thing. Nine days.
Like, that was like, what, day four?
So 9 days, I proposed to her.
Right.
And in a hot air balloon above the desert in Vegas. And she says, no.
Can we put a picture of pictures?
Yeah, I've got
Let's put a picture up here right now so everyone can see this moment. Do you have yourself on one? Hopefully, most people will post one of you on one knee.
So the guy that was the pilot told me that he had never had a failure with a proposal. So I felt really confident that
balloon,
I was going to get it.
The fucking balloon.
I was going to get the yes. And so I give him the phone. She has no idea this is coming, like no clue. I give him the phone to start videoing. I get on one knee. I take out the ring, and she can't believe it. And the first words out of her mouth are, after the "Oh my God," is "No,
fuck,
no,
no."
I'm not ready.
You tossed her over the side of the basket.
And I'm talking about having a captive audience. That was a very awkward 20 minutes down to earth because you can't land immediately. So we had to go back
God. Did your heart sink? Were you devastated?
I was devastated. So was she. But you know what? It brought us together. We were inseparable from that moment.
You have a fucking great attitude. One thing I see about you is you really are a glass half full sort of guy for sure.
Thank you.
And you always seem to take, we all have experiences, right? And, basically the meaning that you apply to that with language, right? You could look at this happened and it was the worst experience or it was a growing experience. And you always seem to grow, which I think is a very important thing in achieving success. And, right now we're talking a lot about the inner game of success. And I want to switch in a few minutes to the outer game, to SEO, because I'm a big believer that the key to really being successful is to integrate both worlds. Some people spend a lot of time on the inner game and others spend a lot on the outer game of success. And I think that's real success, massive success, doing it elegantly, is when you can integrate both together. And that's when you can really manifest things, when you can put those two worlds together,
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So
she rejected you. You were devastated, but it was okay. You got closer. And then what happened?
I reproposed to her 9 months later, and she said yes then. And I proposed to her.
Reproposed.
Yes. The stats on that, which she had looked up.
What are the stats on that?
It's minimal. It's tiny. A reproposal is almost never. So as the months go by and she's starting to sweat a bit, is he going to try again? Because I want him to ask again and I want to say yes. There was a time in June where we were on this amazing trip and she was very sick and we were going up this gondola and I had the ring in my pocket and she's like, how could you take, I feel terrible. It's so cold and windy. What are you doing? She was really giving me the once over for taking her out when she wasn't feeling well. And I'm like, okay, this is probably not the best day for me to do that. So it was actually 3 months later that I reproposed. And the three things that every woman wants for a great proposal. I actually did my research on that.
Let me see if I violated them. Let's see what it is.
Okay. First is they want their nails done.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Super important. Second, got to capture that at least on film, with pictures, better yet on video.
Right.
And number three, it's got to be a surprise.
Okay.
If she knows it's coming.
I agree with the third one. The nail, I'm not sure about the nails.
Well, what is the first thing they're going to do? Put the ring on their finger and take photos and post it to Facebook and Instagram and everything. And if their nails are all chipped and nasty looking, they're going to not want to do that.
I guess they could cut out the top.
It really matters.
I know my graphics guys could put them fucking beautiful nails no matter what. Like 5-inch nails.
Yeah.
You get a lot of great stuff. So let me ask you an important question. So that one question was the profit motive on the Deeksha business that just inherently I'm skeptical, but you explained that well. And I think it's a good explanation. The second thing, and here's what really bothers me about this stuff, is because the story that you told, see, I understand what happened to you. And for me, I make sense. You say you went to this place, you had this awakening, a transformation. and you sort of harness this power to manifest, and you prayed for the woman of your dreams. You wrote out the vision statement, and bam, you even made it a near-term situation, and just like that, it happened. And that's very much along the lines of like The Secret, where like, you know, you want to get rich, you know, you want to become successful, just, you know, close your eyes and visualize a check mm-hmm. for $50,000 showing up in your mailbox, and you just attract that check, and the Lord will try to attract that check. And if you think about it long enough and hard enough, you know, that check will show up in your mailbox. And my opinion is that's bullshit. I mean,
I agree with you on that.
That like the only thing that'll show up in your mailbox is a fucking eviction notice, right? Because you have to take action. And that's
exactly.
And this is the point. See, what you left out of the story, and what I want to add in, is that, yeah, you did all that, but you were also moving towards the things that you wanted in life. You put yourself in a position. You took actions. You worked on yourself physically, emotionally. You went to places that were lots of probably like-minded, open people that thought the same way as you. You would never have, you could wish your fucking life away for the woman of your dreams. And if you're sitting in your house and you think she's going to fall out of the sky and land on your freaking couch like an Animal House where the girl flies through the window, right? That's bullshit to me. So I think, and the mistake, and I just want to clarify to people who are listening that you can't, I don't believe you can manifest anything without the other side of the equation. And I think that what you didn't mention is that you were taking all these actions as well that allowed you, so you put yourself in the proximity. Like law of attraction is like, it's like, you know, that experiment we did in public school where the teacher says the horseshoe magnet and the iron filings, right? And she's like, watch, and nothing happens. And then she moves it close, nothing happens. Close enough. But if you move it close enough, whoosh, it attracts, right? So you only can, I believe, you can only manifest things and attract them when you move towards them. And I see that you did that. And that's the point that I think is important for everyone to realize.
Yeah. Yeah. And
what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree with that?
I do agree with you on that. And it's not just taking massive action. It's having this intention and desire. Like the desire is the engine or the fuel that makes it all happen. So if you are, if you have positive intention and you are really desiring this thing, then the universe wants to make it happen for you. We live in a friendly universe.
But we live in a universe, I believe, that rewards those who also learn the skills required to achieve. It's like, so like, look at yourself though. Like, okay, if you show up to this woman and you're like an unconscionable bore with that, you're not successful. I'm sure there was many things about you that attracted your now wife to you because you had done things that you put yourself in a position where you were desirable. And also just the way, I'm sure the way you spoke and acted, that was probably congruent with her belief systems. And you were both at an event that people have certain beliefs, right? So I really think that to really use the law of attraction or to manifest anything, there's always going to be certain requisite skills that you must attain. And I think that people that don't realize that, they set themselves up for a life of pain and mediocrity. That's my big problem with it.
And I agree with you again that the effort has to be there. And if you don't have the effort and you get the thing, let's say you end up winning the lottery, but you didn't put any effort into winning all that money,
you probably lose it. Yeah.
You will lose it. Yeah. Because that, whatever that blessing is, that gift that you got without earning it, comes with side effects. You get a car from your parents when you turn 16 and you didn't have to work for it, side effects.
It has no value. You know, the things that we don't work for, right?
Yeah.
They have very little value to us. And I think
when you pay attention.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that on some level, and I want to move on to the S because that fat stuff, I love both sides. Right.
Yeah.
But this is interesting because you're interesting because I did not suspect this about you. I thought you'd be a much drier. No, seriously, I thought you could be like a business, right? And didn't think you'd come into fucking ditches and shit, right? So I think it's pretty cool because
if you saw the before photo of me, you'd think, okay, that guy really is dry. And I was back then.
Like Nerd Alert, fucking Pocket Protector fucking business.
Oh, yeah. And we'll have to show the photo too.
Let's put up a Pocket Protector photo here so you get an idea of just how bad it was. But listen, you're obviously not like that anymore. So let's close that out by, so just a closing thought, right? Is that, you know, the success is about integrating the sort of this, you know, like almost like intention in my mind, it alerts your conscious awareness to what's important and what's not. There's only so much that our conscious mind, which is relatively limited in its processing power, we can only taking 3 or 4% of the world, right? Well, maybe you noticed her in the audience, and you because you were already raising up in your back of your mind this.
Yeah, the reticular activating system.
I was going to throw in a buzzer, but you know it, right? So the RAS, right? It alerts you to the things that basically are important, and hence you start noticing opportunities around you. And then if you act on those opportunities, hence the manifestation of success starts always with intention, but it always culminates with taking action, right? Well, agreed,
yes,
or not agreed?
Yes, and if there's no spiritual kind of awe or recognition that we're not driving the bus here, that this is an opportunity that we can participate in, but we need to surrender as well. Like, if I hadn't surrendered essentially and said, please, this is what I want, and can you bring her to me right away, I don't think I would have gotten the outcome that I got, because it wasn't that my reticular activating system was looking for an opportunity. No, my friend came and sought me out and said, you got to meet her. And when that's paired with another miracle that, like, you would think that never could happen, this guy, 15 years after, like, no contact or whatever, this guy that was my employee and I fired and then he sued me for wrongful dismissal. And
typical.
Yeah. He had no grounds to sue me, but he did anyways, frivolous lawsuit. I eventually pay him off.
It's fucking America, right?
I pay him off because it's cheaper to do that rather than win the lawsuit. This guy disappears from the face of the earth for 15 years. And then I'm at another event, a different event that's not a Tony event, Donnie Epstein event. And I'm blissed out on the floor praying for all these people. And I realize I can give remote deekshas, because I get this download, like, oh, I could do this remotely without actually touching the person. And I bless all these people while I'm blissed out laying on the floor after this, what's called an energy entrainment that Donnie had given me. And I think of this guy out of the blue 15 years after, right? Never, ever think of this guy. And then I pray for him. I give them this remote, I found out afterwards from the monks is actually a real thing. It's an intent Diksha. That's what they call it.
Okay.
And the guy calls me on my cell phone 4 days later. Mm. How is that, like, even possible? I'm telling you, there are miracles everywhere. You just have to tap into it.
My sponsor from AA, back when I was in AA, used to say that coincidences are God's way of remaining anonymous.
Yeah, right? I love that.
Anyway, so just one thought on what is, see, to me, I always want to, like, not counter what you say, but I think that, see, here's the thing. I think that the way you look at the world and the way that I tend to look at the world more scientifically, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. In many ways, they're exactly the same thing. But, like, I would say, you said you call it surrender and allow it. I call it not being a boring idiot that would turn a woman off. In other words, mm-hmm. when you say, because when, if you like, but you say I surrendered and I realized I was powerless, in some levels, like, and because of that, you act in a way that's not, like, disgusting and turn someone off. You know what I'm trying to say, though? Like,
but I had skills. That's the thing. I had with the Z, right? And the day
those
before,
those skills don't work on real women. Those are
yes, they did. The day before, and I don't. I never share this part of the story. But I had some success with a woman, a different woman, the night before, because I had learned all this pickup stuff from Neil, and she wasn't the right fit. I mean, it would have been an. It would have probably led to a relationship, but she wasn't the one.
If you met my wife, she'd put a knuckle sandwich on you. Like, some women are not into that whole, they see through that stuff in 2 seconds. I'm not saying it doesn't work for some women, but I think that, again, I think that, and especially, by the way, it's also pretty widely known, a lot of the stuff now.
Well,
it's part of the public, you know,
you can't
culture,
just use regular, you know, pickup lines or openers,
like,
known.
It's been in too many movies and stuff like that, right? So, but she'd probably, honestly, if a guy negged her, she just either walked away.
I didn't neg her. But there's so many different techniques.
I get it.
Once you have success, though, then you get confidence, and then you don't need the techniques. Right. You don't need the openers, because you can just spontaneously open what is referred to as a natural.
I guess my point was is that, like, when you say you surrendered, but I think that but the result of surrender is making you a more attractive human being to someone else. And I think there's a huge part of that. Like, when you surrender and you don't try to force something, That's an attractive quality in a man or a woman. When someone, you know, like when someone's overbearing and trying to force, you immediately turned off, breaks rapport. So I think on a technical level that I would look at, I don't think they're really that much different. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not even saying that your way is wrong or right. I'm just saying that there's two ways to look at it, right?
Yeah. So I just juxtaposing those two days to each other, the day before I met my wife, Orion, and the day of meeting her, I was in a different place spiritually.
Right.
And in a place utilizing the law of attraction.
You were in a Neil Strauss space. He's awesome, by the way.
He is awesome.
I don't mean in a negative way, but I get it. Your mindset.
You should have him on the show, by the way.
I will, yeah. I just started, you know, because I've been threatening to do this for years, and my son finally twisted my arm to get it done. And my son works with me. He's awesome. He's like my partner, and he really makes everything possible. He's a great kid. Awesome.
You should also have Jay Abraham on, too.
Jay's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
I love Jay. Jay's a very good friend of mine. I love Jay.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, let's get to the outer world now, all right? I want to talk about SEO, right? You're an expert at helping business owners and individuals build brands, make money, get hits to this. Like, tell me, okay, let's start from the beginning. All right. You're a company. Mm-hmm. You're a small to medium sized company, right?
Yeah. So this is my second go around. I had another previous company that I was able to sell.
I don't mean you're a small company. I'm saying.
The listener.
Take for an example, you're a regular, average, small, up and coming business owner.
Got it.
You know, in your mid 20s, maybe 30, whatever age you are, right? But you know, and you obviously could definitely help yourself by understanding the basic core principles of SEO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, give me five steps here, like a five, and I know it's never so simple, but, you know, just, I always like to, give me a framework here. Like, what's the first thing someone does? So, you always want to take a look and say, okay, what's the current status, right? Where do you want to go? And then a strategy to get there. But tell me, what's the first thing as an expert that you do when you go to a small, not a huge, you know, fortune, I'm talking a small business owner. Hey, let me show you how to make more money using SEO. What's the first thing you do?
First thing I usually do is check their authority and trust scores. And I'm using tools like Majestic, Ahrefs, Moz, and I'm checking to see how trustworthy or trusted their site is and how authoritative it is, whether it's considered important by Google or unimportant. Because if it's unimportant, they're not going to rank, even if they pour tons of time and effort into building up their content and optimizing the architecture of their site. So there are three pillars to SEO. There's content, there's architecture, which includes all the technical geekery, and then there's links. And if you don't have backlinks, really high quality.
Define backlinks.
Yeah. So when somebody mentions you, like let's say you get an article on CNN talking about you, and then that mention also includes a link to, let's say, jordanbelfort.com.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good win for you as long as it's a followed link. Much better than if it's a no-followed link, meaning that it passes PageRank, it counts as a vote by Google. And then the more votes, the better, the more sites like CNN that are linking to you, the better, but not every site is considered important and authoritative in the eyes of Google. So CNN, that's a great link. Jim Bob's personal homepage, not a great link.
Sure. So in other words, I think the layman's way of looking at this, like the basic principle is that, let's say there's a room full of crowded people here, like, you know, there's 50 people in a room, and someone says, oh, who knows the most about XYZ topic? And if most people are pointing to this guy, especially the smart people and the most popular ones, whoever gets pointed to the most, that's the guy who's on top. Is that basically the way it works?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot more to it. You need to be relevant.
A simplistic way, meaning that, like, you know, the more people that say, oh, yeah, because let's say you're searching for plumbing, right? And there's 50 plumbers, 100 plumbers, 1,000 plumbers, right? And yet this one plumber that's getting written about and talked, everyone's like, oh, that's the best, that's the most well thought of or most talked about plumber. So if everyone has written articles about one guy, he would rise up to the top of Google, right?
Yeah.
So the idea then would be, retrofitting that would be to try to get other people to mention you and build backlinks, right?
Right.
And that could be done either by accident, like I get it just because I'm well-known, right? Or you could actually probably pay people to write articles and do stuff and proactively create backlinks, right? Or no?
So you got to be careful about that, because if Google figures out that you're paying for links, then you'll end up getting in trouble with Google.
Well, so that's a good point, because I'm not an expert at this, right? So I guess there's a healthy way, a legitimate way to do that, like paying a PR firm.
Correct.
To get real publications to write things about you.
That's legit.
That would be legit. And going to pay someone in India to create phony articles and create backlinks would be illegitimate.
Right. Or also...
Give me another two legitimate ways to create backlinks.
Okay. So let's juxtapose some legitimate and more illegitimate ways. So another illegitimate way would be... Yeah. So let's say that somebody is writing for Forbes, many, many writers for Forbes, and some of them have been outed because they take money to include a mention of you and the link, or even to write a whole feature story about you and publish it on Forbes.com. So it's gotten so bad that Forbes no follows all their external links now. If you are a contributor, you can't pass juice, PageRank, link equity to whoever you're writing about. So
meaning that Forbes won't let you include a link, or Google discounts it to zero?
You're allowed to include the link, but then Forbes discounts it to zero, or discounts it, and which then Google doesn't give any credit in the link. So if you add a no follow to the link in the, HTML code.
So then Google knows not, this is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Got it.
Don't count it. So that's an illegitimate example.
Mm-hmm.
A legitimate way.
Would that be though? Let's say Forbes wrote an article about me, was they really wrote about me and they put a link in, would it still be non-followed, or would they allow a legitimate?
If it's a staff writer, you're probably going to get
Right. Okay. That's right. So it's, they distinguish between legitimate articles versus contributors that are just playing a game.
Yeah, which is pretty common.
Which
like
makes,
if you look
and
at
that
BuzzFeed,
makes, and that
for
makes
example,
sense, yeah.
Staff writers, those links pass PageRank. Contributor articles, like if you're part of the BuzzFeed community, those never pass PageRank.
Got it.
Okay. So let's kind of brainstorm some ideas for Joe the plumber.
Right.
How does he get notability?
How about, let's not Joe the plumber, let's use Joe the influencer.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think it's more people probably than I'm guessing.
Okay, so let's say that Joe is influential on on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay, but doesn't have much of a presence on Twitter or like that's his platform is Instagram. Typically what you find is if somebody's really good on a platform, they're influential, they don't have an influential website. Right? You find some influencers got a big name, a big presence on whatever platform on social media. You look at their trust and authority scores in the different SEO tools, and they're terrible.
So typically, they're focusing on one thing. They're not across the board. It's just what Dan brought up, by the way, on my podcast. He said, "Yeah, first thing I do is I'm on all platforms. I'm focusing on all things, right? So the idea is not to. So you would look at the other platforms where they're not maintaining, right? And you try to build that up, or no?
That's part of it, but you're not going to get SEO benefit from building up the weak platform. So let's say you're strong on Twitter. You have 180,000 followers. I checked. And
to my son.
Yeah, that's great. I have 158,000. So I personally love Twitter, and I think it's a very cool platform for keeping up on the news and so forth. So I
Donald Trump's favorite platform.
It is his favorite platform.
He's a master of Twitter. Oh my God.
Now let's say that you're not that good at, or not that prominent on Pinterest. Okay. You're probably not, right? I didn't check your Pinterest.
I've never logged on once.
Yeah. Okay. So you're probably missing out.
Is that pictures or something?
Yeah.
What is Pinterest? Pictures, right?
And you can actually pin YouTube videos. A lot of people didn't know that.
Really?
Yeah. So I have a Pinterest presence. It's not huge, but it's much bigger than the typical person. And that's because I had one of my team dedicate a lot of time to pin thousands of things to dozens of pin boards on my account and really create a nice presence on there. What's the benefit? Well, you get impressions and reach from these different social platforms, but you're not going to get any SEO juice from it because none of these platforms will follow the links. They're all no followed. So what you need to do is, let's say you're Joe the influencer and you want to build up the presence, the authority of your website. Now you're going to have to look at how can I get covered on CNN or these other mainstream media sites where the journalist is going to write about me.
So how do you do that?
How do I get on TV?
How does someone do that? How does an average everyday person that's not, you know, a brand, so to speak, what's the step one?
If you're willing to get on TV, so there's a big difference between authority and celebrity. I was focused very heavily on the authority building. And so building up my presence on Twitter and having books and all that helps build my authority, but it doesn't build my celebrity.
Right.
Being on TV, that's what celebrities are on TV. Authorities don't usually get on TV. So then I started getting on TV, and I took a course. Clint Arthur is the guy who taught me how to do this, and I started cold calling TV producers in the early morning hours, like 4 a.m.
That's an interesting thing, because at Frank Kern's event, we spoke about, you know, Frank Kern, right? I spoke at his event many years ago. And I
2010 or
I,
so.
Yeah, I really quickly brought up about PR. I said, you can actually cold call TV people and get yourself on the, I actually brought that up because it's true. It's a very little known fact that you can actually, if you want to get yourself on TV, you can actually cold call these state. They're looking for subject matter experts, people like, you know, whatever. And you can, and if you call enough, you'll actually definitely, and then it snowballs by you get one, then that resume starts and so forth, right?
Yeah. You start with small local stations, really small markets like that. Tucson.
Sure.
Reno, Albuquerque, and then you work your way up because you're not going to get on Good Morning America as a first-time TV person, right? So you create a one-page
bio about yourself.
It's basically a
fact sheet bio.
Pitch sheet, And that's your segment proposal.
Okay.
You might have multiple segment proposals. You might have I had a segment proposal for Are You a Geek? Take My Quiz, and then I had the geek formula and all that. And then I brought all these gadgets, geeky gadgets, and even an Iron Man costume that I wore at Comic-Con and stuff. And it makes for good TV.
Got
having
it.
Props.
Got it. Got
you,
it.
You know, all
right,
that
so that's
sort of
so
stuff.
Step one. Let's go to step two now. Step one is you got to look, basically take a look at the, essentially who's linking to you, right? How do you start building those links? Is that
well,
that?
If you start with, instead of who's already linking to you, who's linking to your top competitors?
Okay.
And your competitors aren't the traditional competitors. They're the ones that rank above you for the keywords you care about.
Got it.
So you reverse engineer where they're getting their
boom
most powerful
Makes
links
sense.
From. Use tools like Ahrefs, SEMrush, Moz Link Explorer, and so forth, linkresearchtools.com. These are all excellent tools that will
easy
reverse engineer.
Easy to use or difficult to use?
I'd say pretty easy.
Okay.
Pretty easy.
Step two.
Step two is to come up with something that is a campaign that will really set you apart from everybody else. That will be
positioning, positioning.
The signal in all the noise, because everybody has a great article about how to get the most out of your AeroPress or whatever, right? But if you have the definitive article that's 10 times better than everybody else's version, then you got something. So you need to do a content strategy.
Got it.
Content marketing.
Positioning in the marketplace that makes you unique and makes it interesting and stand out, right? In a crowded,
every 10x piece of content. You're much better off having one piece of 10x content than have 100 pieces of me too kind of, cookie cutter content.
Okay, so step two is positioning your brand the right as you stand out, right?
Yeah, to be remarkable.
Remarkable. Okay, step three.
Step three is to do outreach. Because if you just sit back and wait for all that awesome 10x content that you've created,
taking action, moving towards what you want. Oh, how would you do that? What's for average person?
Yeah, for the average person, just hire an agency that specializes in this, who's very good, like a digital PR company, not a link building company, because most of those link building companies are building low quality links, and that it actually could get you a penalty and get you pain in the search engine.
Something I know a lot about these digital guys: just be careful. There's great ones. And there's not so great ones. So do your research, right?
Well, not only that, but have a framework for how to evaluate these folks. So I have on my site on stephanspencer.com an SEO hiring blueprint. So if you're trying to hire a link builder or a digital PR person or an in-house SEO person or an SEO consultant such as myself, you want to go through a process where you, for example, in the interview, you ask them trick questions. And most people don't know SEO very well, and so they don't know what kind of trick questions to ask.
Yeah.
Well, I've got another great free download on my site called the SEO BS Detector. And that has all these trick questions and the only one right answer for each one. And they'll have no clue that you're slipping these into the interview. Like ask, for example, what's your process for optimizing my meta keywords? That's a trick question.
Right.
Now, anybody who knows SEO should know that meta keywords never counted in Google. Never. They were never a positive ranking signal, not even in the very early days.
Got it.
If they say anything other than that, they say, well, they don't count as much.
Those are the words just appear randomly throughout your plugging words in, like random words, and to say this.
So you're asking, like, tell me about your process for working with clients. Tell me about the tools that you use.
Keep repeating a word over and over.
Okay. So if they're failing this BS detector, you know to get rid of them.
So it's hire digitally. Step four?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, if you do want to do this in-house, you need a proper tool for the outreach so that when you're outreaching to bloggers and influencers who Google considers to be influential, that you have a workflow and some sort of structure. And Pitchbox is my tool of choice. It's kind of like a Salesforce.com, but for link outreach.
Cool.
Yeah.
Next, step four.
Step four. Well, you need to rinse and repeat and come up with new and more awesome, remarkable content ideas.
Content creation.
Yeah, because it's not a set it and forget it sort of thing.
Right.
If, let's say you have some success with, I don't know, let's say you set a Guinness World Record. One of my clients, Zappos, set a Guinness World Record for most simultaneous high fives. Leverage that. Isn't that weird? They didn't leverage it. After that happened.
There's a record for everything.
It's pretty cool.
I have a record for the consumption of Quaaludes.
Do you?
Yeah, I think 54,000, I think, you know. There's probably someone that did more than me, but not. That's not like published.
But is it like, it's got to be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
I guess you can't take the movie for a fact, but you know, I got a gold Guinness about that, you know.
They have to like come and verify it or whatever. So let's say you get a Guinness World Record.
They get to check my liver probably, you know. Anyway.
So now you want to leverage that because it's got legs. You know, it's like, okay, I got some traction for this particular campaign. Let's say you made an infographic of everything that you want to know about, I don't know, Quaaludes or whatever. In an infographic.
Did someone say Quaaludes?
So if that gets traction, like these are all the health effects that happen and everything. And then you think, okay, how am I going to spin that into something else? I'm going to create a kind of man on the street, woman on the street interview where I'm asking a lot of these questions. Like, what do you think? What do you think of the health impacts of Quaaludes?
Yeah. And
when do you think Quaaludes were invented and whatever? And you get all these funny answers. And then you
end up in a lot of people's beds you didn't really want to be in, I'll tell you that much. Let's move on to step five. So we're running out of time. Step five, last step for SEO.
Okay. This is step five is to rinse.
Step four is to rinse and repeat. Step five is?
Step five.
Give me a good step. You know, there's only four steps.
Yeah, I think that's all of it. Well, you know what? There's a lot of infrastructure that you have to put in place. Because if you just have a default WordPress install or Shopify install for your website, it's not going to be search engine optimized out of the gate.
Let me ask you the most important question of all. Where do you think this is going in the next 3 to 5 years? Like, you know, a forward looking on SEO and just, you know, anybody looking to, you know, use the internet to get leads, build their brand. Where do you think the next big way, what would you be doing right now forward looking?
The thing I would be doing forward looking, and I am doing it, is to invest heavily in understanding the future. So I am part of something called Abundance 360. Do you know Peter Diamandis?
I know Peter. I don't know him personally. I know him. He's SpaceX, right?
He's
a nice guy.
No, not friend SpaceX. XPRIZE.
He's a friend of Joe's, Polishes, who I love.
So he has this event.
I've spoken to him on the phone. Yeah.
He's awesome. Yeah. He'd be a great guy for this podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to call you. Yeah.
Yeah. The Abundance 360 conference is 3 days of seeing the future as if you had a crystal ball right in front of you. AI, 3D printing, nanotechnology, VR, virtual reality, AR, augmented reality. It's all in that 3-day event. It is incredible. Like, I had no idea how big esports already is and where it's going, and the fact that there's so many of the people who are involved that are just so passionate about it that they are
sports, as in sitting playing sports behind the
being a computer gamer is actually a huge thing, and if I was skeptical. And I got to tell you one thing about skepticism.
It's like the couch potato's dream, right? Monetize being a couch potato, right?
There are people, like there are training facilities
I know,
that help esports, people who want to be on teams.
Wow.
And it's wild. But the thing about skepticism that I want to point out, and this was a huge epiphany for me, I was a skeptic, but this idea, I think, was a game changer for me. If you think of skepticism on one side of the coin, the other side of the coin is cynicism.
Very different things.
And it's easy to go from skepticism to cynicism.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are different.
Skepticism, but healthy cynicism is dark and evil and really it sort of, you know, it stops you from succeeding.
Yeah. And so I've implemented something called the willing suspension of disbelief. So I'm more open now than I ever was things.
But not in a foolish way.
Not in a foolish
way. In a measured way.
In a intentional and careful way, but awesome. One that I think helps me show up more powerfully in the world.
Where do people listening find out more about you? Because I don't want your site. You give away a lot of, what I like about the stuff is it's free, but valuable. It's not just bullshit trying to sell people. What's your website?
It's stephanspencer.com. Yep. So there's some stuff on, I actually have an episode that where I was a guest on the Future Proof podcast where I talk about the future of SEO because I know we ran out of time for that. But I also have a chapter in The Art of SEO that's all dedicated to the future of search.
Boom.
And so that's a great resource.
This isn't a one sitting book here.
No, it's 994 pages.
Holy shit.
1,000 page book there. Yeah.
You just do some wrist curls with this thing.
I'll tell you, if I...
This book is like more, I think...
if I hand it to a prospect, that prospect is almost certainly going to say, can I just hire you for this?
There you go.
Yeah. But so marketingspeak.com is another great resource to go to. That's my marketing-focused podcast. There are a lot of SEO episodes on there. And getyourselfoptimized.com is my biohacking, life hacking, productivity and spirituality podcast.
Awesome. Well, listen, number one, congratulations because you have an awesome life. And I love your attitude. I really do. And I appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.